Live from Capitol Hill, it's the Jordan Seculo Show. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. To follow Jordan on Twitter, go to twitter.com/JordanSeculo. Tweet Jordan to get your question on the air. For more information and the latest updates, go to JordanSeculo.com. Now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to the Jordan Seculo Show. We are taking some phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Coming up on the show, Eric Steckelback from CBN News, their terrorism analyst. He sat down with Geert Wilders from the Netherlands this week in Washington, D.C. The interview just went up at cbnnews.com. We'll talk to him about that, what's happened in Yemen with this new bomb plot, a bomb made all out of plastic, the underwear bomb part two that was foiled by the CIA. And then number three, the third issue we'll talk about, Eric, is what's happened in Syria. What are the right sides? What do we do? He'll be coming up the next segment of the broadcast. We'll talk about the Department of Justice in the third. I did want to try to get some of the calls that were hanging on from Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett, the ACLJ's Director of Government Affairs, in the studio with me. Than, let's try to grab one or two of those.
Yeah, Jordan, let's start with Billy. He's calling in from California on line one. Billy, welcome to the Jordan Seculow Show.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to say quickly, I had an abortion when I was 16 years old because I believed the lies that it wasn't a child. I am now 41 years old, and I have had to live with that regret for 25 years. I still get emotional over it. I could have been a grandmother by now, but that grandchild doesn't exist because of the abortion I had. And quickly to say, you know, pregnant means the developing of an offspring in the uterus. An offspring is child, and fetus means young one. So how can you argue against that?
Yeah, you know, Billy, and I think you're one of the, you alluded to it, but when you had the abortion, Planned Parenthood, or the people telling you this is okay, this is fine, they told you that that was no problem, right? It's no issue, don't worry about this, you're doing the right thing, this is not a bad decision, that you won't regret this, et cetera. The list goes on.
My experience, when I went into Planned Parenthood, I said, I'm pregnant. And they said, what do you want to do? I said, an abortion, I guess. And they said, okay. Threw me on the table, aborted it, took the money out the door. I went after I puked in the toilet.
You know, I mean, folks, there it is right there. Billy, you're brave for calling in, and thank you for calling in. People should hear these stories. And I'm glad that women do call in to tell us these stories, because it's important for people to hear how this works, how it did work, and what it's done in the future. You know, what it does 30 years later after these abortions are performed. And they make it like a routine medical procedure. Just, okay, fine, here's your money. Take your money. Thank you very much. Have the abortion. And, of course, Billy was calling about that because we talked about this story where the White House is now this is a very pro-abortion, well, not very, they are a pro-abortion White House, and they love getting money to Planned Parenthood. And the president's made no, not hidden that at all. In fact, you know, his first campaign speech at Ohio State, he praised, supported Planned Parenthood, said we need to stop fighting over whether or not to fund Planned Parenthood. So he's proud of that. But they make you give in the White House visitor's log to apply to take a tour of the White House. You have to say there, if you're pregnant, you have to put down that you're pregnant and count that as a person. You know, with your family's last name and the name of the baby, or baby is a first name, and the date you're submitting the request is a birthday, and the gender, if you know the gender, you can put male or female down. You don't have a Social Security net yet, but you can put zero on the Social Security form. I mean, the whole list goes on, yet it's a baby when it's a baby, but for, you know, legal purposes, when you're talking about abortion, it's not really a child yet in the womb. Folks, thank you for your phone call. Sorry we couldn't get to all of them before Eric Steckelback joins us in just a few moments. We're going to be talking about what's happening in the world of terror. You know, some of the administration officials said the war on terror is over. Doesn't seem to be the case. We uncovered a new bomb plot, Underwear Bomber Part 2, and then what's happening in Syria, what's happening with Islamic radicalism. We'll talk about that with Eric Steckelback from CBN News. You can watch his interview with Geert Wilders at cbnnews.com. Get your copy of The Foundations of Freedom. Again, folks, it's 877-989-2255. If you remember J.B. McCuskey from the show the last couple times, ran in West Virginia, won the primary race last night. Congrats to J.B. You're listening to The Jordan Sekulow Show. Follow me at twitter.com/JordanSekulow. Hey, welcome back to the Jordan Sekulow Show, folks. A good friend of ours, Eric Steckelback from CBN News, their chief terrorism analyst, is joining us now. There's a lot going on in the world, even after the administration kind of, some of the officials said, you know, the war on terror is over. We learn about this new bomb plot with a totally new design of kind of underwear bomb part two. And Al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula in Yemen. And then it's also Eric's done a very interesting interview this week with Geert Wilders. So, Eric, it's always great to have you on the show.
Hi, Jordan. Always great to be here. Thank you.
Let me ask you first about what's happened in Yemen, because we have heard that kind of, you know, the post-Bin Laden world, that Al-Qaeda's on the run, the terrorism and the whole war on terror is basically over with, and we're in kind of a new paradigm. And then we find out about yet another attempt to get bombs onto airplanes and blow them up and kill Western targets. Where these kind of threats, I mean, this one came out pretty quickly. The president found out about in April. It comes out, you know, a few weeks later. Is that coming from the administration, the commentary on the war on terror? Is this kind of boosting the president just about the Bin Laden attack? I mean, tell people, how real is this threat?
Yeah, it's still a very, very real on so many levels, Jordan. Look, at the end of the day, Al-Qaeda is just one cog in a multifaceted threat. How about Iran? How about Hezbollah? How about the Muslim Brotherhood? These are all, in my opinion, greater long-term threats than Al-Qaeda. So that's number one. Number two, the second reason why the White House saying the war on terror is over is folly. And by the way, it's not a war on terror. Terrorism is a tactic. It's Islamic jihadist war on us. And the second reason it's not over is that Al-Qaeda, while its hierarchy has been weakened in Pakistan, the group actually covers more ground now geographically than it did on 9/11, Jordan, from Pakistan to Somalia to Yemen, North Africa, Sinai, Europe, and once again, they're establishing a base in Iraq. So Al-Qaeda is definitely not defeated. Have they been weakened in terms of their hierarchy? Yes. And have they kind of lowered their expectations? Maybe not a 9/11 style attack, more a Fort Hood or an underwear bomber style attack. That's kind of their new modus operandi. So have they been hurt? Yes. But still very, very much a threat and very much capable of regrouping in a major way if we don't keep on our guard.
You know, what do we do, Eric, about these stories that we hear about and trying to get informed about, trying to understand the scope of the threat and these various, you know, Al-Qaeda affiliates and organizations? We know what's happening in Yemen is there are areas now completely controlled by Islamist groups. These bomb makers are well known to our security intelligence world. These people want to hit America. They want to hit Western targets. The administration seems to, again, it's kind of playing both sides. On the one side, they're acting and taking actions that are fairly tough, very tough on terror, killing Bin Laden. But on the other hand, trying to, I think, mislead people a bit and saying that this is, you know, we've won this and this war is over. Let's move on. When, in fact, we know when these stories don't pop up, if you've really, you may have damaged the group and hurt these organizations, but they're not done.
Yeah, Jordan, that is a great point, and that's one of my main qualms with this administration. They're willfully misleading the American people, willfully. They're telling the American people, look, this thing is over, and we're only fighting Al-Qaeda. They lead the American people to believe that our only enemy in this fight against Islamic jihadists globally is Al-Qaeda. If we defeat Al-Qaeda, we can pack up our bags and go home. That is exactly the wrong message. Number one, as I said, Jordan, Al-Qaeda still thriving in many areas of the world. But number two, I can't stress enough, this global jihadist threat is so much more than one group. Iran is the vanguard of global jihad, and they're on the verge of a nuclear weapon, which they will use. Hezbollah, many U.S. officials have said in the past that Hezbollah, and I believe this as well, is even more dangerous than Al-Qaeda. And, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood taking advantage of this so-called Arab Spring to really make that push for really an Islamic superstate, a caliphate in the Middle East. And by the way, the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the granddaddy of them all, including Al-Qaeda, when it comes to Islamic terror groups, Jordan, a delegation from the Brotherhood in Egypt was at the White House just a few weeks ago. So that tells you where this White House really stands and their complete lack of knowledge or understanding of this threat.
And it seems like another situation, Eric, which has become difficult is what's happened in Syria. I mean, you've got the administration, and this is another, I think it's why it's great to have you, Eric, on with us, because these are all very different issues and different situations we face, and the players in each country different. In Syria, you have another uprising, but I've still heard that there are fears that those on the side of the uprising are also linked to Islamists, and that what happens there could be potentially worse, even though the current Syrian regime is a close partner with Iran. It's not 100% aligned with Iran. But what to make of that situation? How should people look at that situation? Is it part of the Arab Spring Islamist uprising? Is it more local, more domestic, internally kind of a conflict? What should people? Where should we be? What side is there? Is there a right side, I guess, is the best question to ask. Sometimes there isn't.
Yeah, Jordan, to me that's a great question, because Syria is such a tricky situation for the reasons you described. Look, it may have started as an organic thing, much like in Tunisia, Egypt, started as an organic democracy movement among more secular-minded Syrians, but it has quickly morphed. As the months have gone on, the Islamist factions in Syria have risen to the forefront, and now, once again, the Muslim Brotherhood is rising to the forefront and leading the opposition in Syria. So my big fear is that if Assad is ousted, Islamists like the Brotherhood, which will be equally bad, will come to power like we've seen in other surrounding countries. But that said, on the other hand, look, it can't be a bad thing for Bashar Assad to go. And the main reason, not only is he a tyrant, a killer, and a murderous regime, but it weakens Iran. A post-Assad Syria has to weaken Iran, at least in the short term, and weaken Hezbollah. Because think about it, Jordan, you have that whole pipeline from Tehran to Damascus, to southern Lebanon, literally a pipeline of rockets and missiles that go through Syria via Iran and arrive in the hands of Hezbollah right on Israel's northern border. So you would think, and Iran is so, I don't want to say reliant on Syria, but they really need Syria as an ally for to really bring their plans to wipe Israel off the map to fruition. In many ways, it's great to have that Syrian base for them. So you would think if Assad gets ousted, wow, that's got to hurt Iran and Hezbollah. But this is such a difficult situation, because if he does get ousted, I hate to say it, the most likely beneficiaries in Syria will be Brotherhood-tied Islamists. So no easy answers there. At the end of the day, I don't think anyone will be sad to see Assad go other than the Iranians. But man, what is the alternative?
You know, it is very difficult. Eric has written the book, The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat. That's available at Amazon.com. You can go to JordanSekulow.com as well. We've got the link there. Eric, you did another very interesting interview. It's posted now to CBNNews.com this week with someone else who got a new book out, Geert Wilders from the Netherlands, who's the parliamentarian and had the whole legal battle and death threats waged against him. I've seen him once in the United States, and the amount of security he travels with is fairly unbelievable, considering what he's doing is talking about radical Islam and the threat. He does it in a very direct way. He does it in Europe. But you sat down with him. Tell people what they'll see in the interview at CBNNews.com, because it's very interesting, and not a lot of people have seen him do an interview like that.
Right. Yeah, Jordan. I mean, one of the most fascinating interviews, if not the most fascinating interview I've ever done. 30 minutes with Geert Wilders, one of the most wanted men in the world, a guy who has an Al-Qaeda death sentence, a fatwa, on his head. And Jordan, I'll tell you, for the politically correct, don't tune in, because he pulls no punches. And look, he quotes from the Quran, the Hadiths, Islam's core text, and he makes a direct correlation from jihadist violence to Islam itself, to the Quran itself. So he's a bold guy. He's going to say what he thinks. He's a champion of free speech, a champion of Judeo-Christian Western civilization. And he comes at it in such a bold, outspoken way that we're not used to hearing here in the politically correct West. But Wilders, he throws caution to the wind. He tells it like it is. He's a fascinating guy. He's bold. And, it was just a great interview. It really was. And I encourage everyone to check it out, CBNNews.com, because you're not going to see many politicians speak like this guy. And by the way, he's no wild-eyed extremist European far-right guy. He's pro-Israel, a friend of Israel, lived in Israel for 2 years, a Zionist, not a racist bone in his body, but he is very firm in his stance on Islam.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, folks, that's right on the homepage of CBNNews.com. Steckelbeck on Terror, this very important interview. And I think you will be surprised, because what you think about some of these individuals and how they're labeled in some of the media and some of the reports, it's very different than their actual background. As Eric mentioned, you know, Gert lived in Israel for a number of years. So this kind of idea that this is some kind of neo-Nazi-inspired white supremacy is not true at all. Watch the interview. And, Eric, as always, thank you for coming on and keep us informed about what's happening in the war on terror that we believe is still going on, the war against jihadism. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Jordan, thank you. Take care.
And, folks, you can get Eric's book at jordanseculo.com. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Jordan Seculo Show. Follow me at twitter.com/JordanSeculo. Welcome back to the Jordan Seculo Show. A lot has been discussed about the Department of Justice and some of the decisions they have made. Now, I've been on Fox News. I've talked about just recently all of the things the Department of Justice has done after a report by the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee said they had no concern whatsoever. Disregard is what he called it. Chairman Lamar Smith from the House Judiciary Committee, a Texas congressman, disregard for the Constitution, a more partisan Department of Justice, and more about politics and than ever before, is what they said. This is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Now, you know about Fast and Furious is kind of dragging their feet, and that was one of the congressman's concerns, that they don't respond to the document request. They really don't care about these requests. But another issue that's very interesting that's come out in Newsweek, and my dad was on Fox News yesterday that talked about another issue involving the Department of Justice, not just Fast and Furious, not just the more politically charged issues like suing Arizona and the nominations of some of the judicial nominees, some of the information, the DOMA issue, all of that. But here we have the financial sector. There's this whole task force has been put together at the White House. Let me do one more time. There's a whole task force has been put together at the Department of Justice on financial crimes, and that nothing has really happened. Now, Department of Justice Attorney General Eric Holder actually is from a law firm, was formerly the law firm, that represented a lot of these top financial institutions. So what is it with the Department of Justice not moving? It's the lowest point ever in these kind of financial crimes, you know, the white-collar crime world, if you will. It's the lowest point ever. My dad was on Fox News to talk about it. Let's take a listen.
All right, well, a bombshell new report claiming that the U.S. Justice Department is taking part in selective prosecution, intentionally avoiding cases against big Wall Street firms, and this is according to a Newsweek story. Because of Eric Holder's ties, they say, to the attorneys for those white shoe firms. So the Obama administration promised initially that they would investigate Wall Street fat cats after the mortgage meltdown. Here is Attorney General Eric Holder on this back in 2009.
The task force is designed to strengthen our collective efforts in conjunction with our federal, state, and local partners to investigate and to prosecute significant financial crimes relating to the current financial crisis, to recover ill-gotten gains, and to ensure just and effective punishment for those who perpetrate financial crimes.
So how's that been going is the question. Jay Sekulow is the chief counsel at the American Center for Law and Justice, and he joins me now. Do you agree with this report by Newsweek?
I think Newsweek's right. It's the politics of prosecution. You've got the 20-year low for crime prosecutions, criminal cases brought against the financial institutions that were responsible for the collapse. So remember, this was a big part of the Obama administration's policies at the Justice Department, a big part of what they ran on when President Obama was running for president. And then you look at the history, and where Newsweek is absolutely correct is we're at a 20-year low of criminal prosecutions when it comes to the financial sector, which is unbelievably incredible because we've had the most difficult four-year period in our nation's history on finances since the Great Depression. So you have to ask yourself, what's really at play here? And it is, I think, the politics of prosecution. I was a government lawyer. I understand there's priorities in litigation when you've got a lot of cases to move after. But this is an entire team that was set up to go after these fraud cases, and nothing's happened of any significance.
Feel, and I don't think it's isolated to this administration. Sometimes you feel like, you know, these task force that get created, you wonder what the heck ever happens with them. And you think back to what Eric Holder has focused on, and I, right as soon as he took office, one of the things that he said he was going to focus on was investigating our own members of the CIA for enhanced interrogation tactics. He got a big backlash for that. And then you go through and you think of Fast and Furious and all of the things that have been on his plate that he's been dealing with over time. But you do wonder, you know, what the heck happened to, you know, they constantly talk about what they were handed in the financial crisis. What have they done about it?
They've done nothing about it, but what they have done is created their own problems. You mentioned Fast and Furious. So we've got the Department of Justice involved in a gun running program at the same time that they're investigating themselves because of that. They take the time and taxpayer resources to sue the state of Arizona for enforcing Arizona to enforce immigration laws, which the federal government acknowledges, including Eric Holder's Justice Department, they don't have the resources to do. Then you look at the financial fraud that's taken place over the last 5 or 6 years, and you're right about these task force. Now, I will tell you a couple of task force that have worked. We had the terrorism task force under Bush. Yeah. That worked. Why? It was targeted, it was direct, and it had an end game. The problem here is this is politics, and the politics say, let's create this financial fraud task force because it sounds like we're going to be real aggressive, and then Newsweek rightly uncovers nothing has happened. 20-year low.
What Newsweek is suggesting is that the law firms that Eric Holder was associated with represent some of these huge Wall Street banks, and that there is a quid pro quo. You know, you keep your hands off, don't touch us, and we will, you know, we'll continue to give donations to the Obama administration and all of that. Now, whether or not they can prove that in this piece remains to be seen. But I do want to point out, I mean, there are things that the administration will point to as victories in this area. The largest insider trading case that has ever been prosecuted was prosecuted under this administration. And they will say that it's not true, that they haven't been serious about pursuing
these. Most of the cases that the Department of Justice have brought have been in the civil fraud arena. And we hear the word fraud, so we assume it's criminal fraud. That's not always the case. I did a lot of civil fraud prosecutions where it's penalties. The penalties
to
are
money back.
Yeah. You don't get people put in jail. I will tell you this. You had, if you look at the financial crisis that took place, and weighing guilt and innocence is something the Justice Department has to make a determination. They have a standard, the likelihood of successful litigation. So they create this monster of a task force to bring these causes of actions, and nothing happens. That I call that waste of taxpayer resources and misdirection by the Department of Justice itself.
I'll bring up one other thing before we leave, and that is, you know, you can talk about the Wall Street firms. You can also talk about the SEC and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, nobody has been So I mean, that's a whole other.
Yeah, but they're getting a pass because again, you know, the Justice Department could have very easily said there's a conflict of interest between certainly between Eric Holder and the firms that his firm represented these banks. Put in different prosecutors to do it. Right. Instead, create a task force and do nothing. And that's what we've seen take place here.
Interesting piece in Newsweek. Jay, thank you very much.
Thanks
good to talk
me.
To you today.
You too.
You know, folks, that was, again, ACLJ, we do a lot of work. Our legal backgrounds help. And my dad talking about that issue, I think it shows you the complications of the Department of Justice. You know, we've been very critical of some of the Department of Justice moves when it comes to this war on states. I think, you know, whether it's the Texas voter ID or you're talking about Arizona immigration, of course, the health care law and the Fast and Furious information. And when you tie this all together, you can get very frustrated saying we're not going to defend DOMA anymore. We're just done with that. Let Congress, we'll leave that to Congress. And then you look at the financial info. You'll hear so much about financial fraud. We hear about the fat cats, the 1%, and the labeling of conservatives as that's this group. And then you look at it, you realize there were more of these prosecutions for real criminal fraud going on under the Bush administration than it has been under the Obama administration at 20-year low. And we hear this kind of demonization of the business industry, and you wonder why America's economy is in trouble and what we need to change that. Folks, I think, you know, you watch these interviews, you can share them. They're on ACLJ.org right on the front of the homepage. Let me encourage you to do something, though, right now. We are offering our Foundations of Freedom. It's absolutely free. We don't offer it all the time. We are right now. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, Declaration of Independence, Gettysburg Address, put together for you in a booklet, not just pieces of paper, but a booklet you can take with you. great for homeschoolers, great for grandkids. It's great for your church group. Get one to your pastor. If you want to copy the Foundations of Freedom, all you have to do is call our toll-free number right now. It really is absolutely free. It's a thank you to our ACLJ supporters, our members, the listeners to the broadcast, for staying up to date, for staying engaged, for staying involved. Call now, 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. Or request your copy online at aclj.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.